You ready for a motion?
Yeah, that's all right.
Motion to table?
You don't know murder the way I know murder.
Curfew violation?
I know enough to be afraid.
Yeah, okay.
Morning, we are back again with CS for Senate Bill 3.
Yes, we are. I have with me Jack Chenoweth from Ledge Legal, who I had given him what I thought was Representative Porter's concern, and he has come up with an amendment, which I believe you all have in your packet. However, this amendment will necessitate a concurrent resolution because it changes the title. Have you read the amendment?
No, I have not.
I'm not sure it does what you want it to do, so.
Are there any other questions or discussion while we're kind of reading amendment?
Well, I can wait if people read the amendment.
Oh, good, okay. If there are, Jack, did you have anything to just answer questions? While we're kind of reading that, what we might do to save some time, then we have Annie Carpinetti, in-law, who is, we had her. I don't see her. We have, okay. You're on, Annie. Senate Bill 3. Senate Bill 3?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question.
Representative Bundy.
Ms. Carbonetti, and maybe this should have been directed toward Mr. Chenoweth, but one of the two I'm sure will be able to answer. If we adopted this amendment, it's my impression that a municipality might establish its own ordinance so that it could charge parents with being a part of this curfew violation. This law would not require a municipality to adopt such an ordinance. Is that correct?
Through the chair, are you speaking about 0-LS0078/E.1, that amendment?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I haven't had much of a chance to read it, but I think it's optional. The municipality may adopt such a reference.
Mr. Chairman, I see Mr. Chenoweth.
The author is saying yes.
And I was referring to his explanation, Mr. Chairman, if I might. Just says, and I just wanted for the record and for my own understanding to clarify that we weren't going to establish a law now that's going to require parents to be arrested, but if municipalities felt this was a problem and would like to follow up with Representative Porter's concern, and one that I certainly share, that parents ought to be involved in this curfew violation and getting their kids to court, then a municipality could choose to write ordinances to achieve this. Mm-hmm. And that's a correct understanding.
Yes, Representative Porter.
Mr. Chairman, there is a second alternative that was what I was reading on, actually. And I think Ms. Carpinetti is prepared to explain that to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I was asked by your lawyer, the lawyer for your committee, to find out what happens to parents if they don't show up. And I did that. I checked in Juneau, and I spoke with Judge Freilich, who does these cases that are directed directly to district courts and not through DFYS. And they're minor consuming cases and tobacco cases and various traffic offenses. And the law requires the parents to accompany their children presently. And Judge Freilich told me that the parents generally do show up with their kids, and if they don't, a summons is issued to them, and the summons is served by the judicial services. They generally call the parents and ask if they want to be served personally or whether they would prefer to come and pick it up at the courthouse in person. Sometimes they would prefer to come pick it up in person.
That's if they don't, so it's not a contempt if they don't show up, their summons, they're issued a summons if they don't show up.
If they don't show up. I assume at a certain point if they are served with a summons and they don't show up, then maybe an order, and Judge Freilich told me that only once has he had to issue an order to show cause why a parent could not be held in contempt for not showing up.
Oops, anybody?
From my understanding now, that this they're doing this based on state law or local ordinance?
State law.
Okay. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, then this is, this summons is issued after the young person has failed to respond to a summons.
I believe that a summons is issued before the first appearance to the parents, too, so that they know before the first appearance that they should show up.
So the summons for the young person and the parent are issued concurrently?
I assume if the person is cited for an offense, then that contains the summons, and then they issue a summons for the parent separately.
That seems to be a little bit...
I also was told by Mr. Wolliver from the court system, he checked this morning with the Anchorage court system. See, the court system are the people that know, because the state doesn't appear on these cases, nor does DFYS, that they do require in Anchorage that the parents show up, and if they don't, they issue a summons for them to come in.
Any other questions of Annie? Representative Porter.
Well, let me see if I understand what the bill does. Maybe we need an explanation. What does the bill do?
Well, I thought she was going to respond.
As far as community service.
Check, what does the bill do then in context with the existing system?
Sponsor had asked that the provision for violations of curfew be added to the list of offenses for which a minor can be prosecuted in the district court. And that's what we started out to do. In Anchorage, much of the handling of these relatively low-level offenses is handled through a civil or administrative process that Anchorage takes advantage of under the municipal code. So we had to build an exception in for that. As the bill moved along, provision was made for the addition of, or a limitation of, a fine of not more than $250, and for being able to satisfy that fine through a community work provision, all of which were added in by the Senate's Judiciary Committee.
So the bill allows a juvenile case that would have been handled in juvenile court to go to district court?
The law today, the statutory law today, simply authorizes municipalities to adopt curfew ordinances. It's up to municipalities. The question, I guess, in the sponsor mind is, where do these go? How are these to be handled? And in the absence of anything else, I assume that they would be handled through the juvenile adjudication and delinquency process, because there would be no exception made for them for a criminal hearing. So the sponsor's approach was to move them out from under the adjudication of delinquency 4712 provisions and over into the criminal side with jurisdiction assigned to the district court. And we've kind of gone on from there.
Mr. Chairman, if I can ask one more question.
Sure.
Recognizing what I think the impetus of handling juvenile cases is in the municipality of Anchorage, at least. Who's asking for this?
It came about because of the city of Juneau. The city of Juneau wanted to put in place a curfew ordinance. But there's no way, only through DFYS and Superior Court, to handle those. Well, as you all know, DFYS can't handle all the other things on their plate. So they did not do a curfew ordinance because there's no point in having an ordinance when the kids know nothing's going to happen to you if you break curfew.
Just one more.
The
other alternative here that would allow this to go through the civil side as opposed to the criminal side would allow for the kinds of programs that are going on in Anchorage for this kind of an offense. As I, and Annie, stop me if I get off track here. What Juno's asking really is to take an area of violation that DFYS doesn't have time to handle and put it into the district court that doesn't have time to handle.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Chair, Representative Porter, I have spoken to Judge Froelich here in Juneau. He likes this bill. He is happy that we're going to have it. He has a Friday afternoon court, I guess, for juvenile offenses dealing with tobacco, alcohol, and those things that are now in his court. He feels that his caseload will not increase all that much because the kids who are drinking and speeding and all those other things, will 75% of them will be the same kids. And it doesn't change what Anchorage is doing now. They don't have to do anything differently.
Yeah, okay. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. We have Representative Croft. And then
following up on Representative Porter's comments, and I don't know if we're off track. If we're off track, we're off track together. Why can't Juneau do the same thing that Anchorage does, whatever administrative type of hearing or procedure that they use? Why can't Juneau do that?
There's no good reason why Juneau can't follow the lead. My sense is that Anchorage has the advantage of being has a population that will support the kind of administrative arrangement that you have up there, and that may not be possible to do or is desirable to do down here in a town that's roughly one-tenth the size of Anchorage and probably would have about one-tenth volume of minors going through.
Can anyone describe just a little bit more, not a lot, about how Anchorage does it? It's not DFYS and it's not criminal court. It's something different.
Right now, David, Margo,
would you like to join us at the table?
Margo is representing the administration on this particular bill, and she can help you out.
Jack, don't go away. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Margo Knute. I'm Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law and representing the Governor's Children's Cabinet on youth and justice initiatives. And the procedure that the City of Anchorage is using in their curfew matters is one of the models that this administration raises to the rest of the state for effective intervention with juveniles who are at risk, and that includes curfew violators. And what they've adopted is a hearing officer system where the juvenile is summoned to appear before a hearing officer who is acting as a judge. And the civil penalties that are available obviously do not include detention, and you can't give a criminal record. But short of that, there is a mechanism for the fine, community work service in lieu of it. And frankly, we are pleased with the current model that Anchorage is using. House Bill 16 includes provisions that would encourage other cities, municipalities to adopt similar programs, and criminalizing curfew violations is inconsistent with the direction we're trying to move in. What you have here, instead of serious offenders, are kids who are at risk of becoming criminals, and what is appropriate is intervention rather than prosecution. We did ask the sponsor of the bill if she would include the governor's initiatives in this area, and she's been reluctant to do so to this point. And there's some philosophical disagreements that people have on how to relate to at-risk youth, and frankly, Judge Frelick is pretty much a one-man crusade in the state. He's the only judge I know who is putting kids in detention on tobacco violations, and Johnson Center is seriously overcrowded. There's a difference of opinion on whether that is an appropriate disposition for those cases, but this is the city of Juneau could adopt the same hearing officer diversion system that is working very well in Anchorage, and Anchorage has no intention of utilizing this if it passes. The prosecuting attorney there does not want to do a bunch of curfew violations. Their resources are strapped already, to say the least.
Margo, do you know whether other municipalities than Juneau and Anchorage, so Fairbanks, any of the other areas, have curfew violations that this would affect? Or curfew laws, I'm sorry.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I don't know how many municipalities have adopted curfew ordinances. I believe that Fairbanks has, but I don't know that, and I'm not sure how they're enforcing it.
Any other questions of any of the group at the table?
Mr. Chairman, I believe House Bill 16 is coming to this committee perhaps as early as tomorrow, and it might afford the committee an opportunity to sort of review the array of options that are available on responding to this level of offense.
Suggestion. Any objection to holding this over and kind of looking at 16 as well? Hearing none, we'll revisit this when we take up House Bill 16.
Mr. Chairman, I will go to prepare your coming.
Oh, yes.
Your coming, and just to remind you that it's a bill at special request from Your Eminence that we will be hearing today. But don't feel any pressure.
Yeah, don't feel any pressure. The next bill up is Senate Bill 70, but I don't know. We've only got about 7 or 8 minutes. Can you lead us through that quickly? Just don't shoot at buildings.
Of course. Having seen James shoot, I know he can't hit the inside of a bar, can't hit a barn from the inside.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is James Armstrong, staff to Senator Donnelly. Senator Donnelly is on the Senate floor right now and apologizes for not being able to speak before the committee on Senate Bill 70. Basically, this bill creates a Class B felony to discharge a firearm at a dwelling or in the direction of a building and the building is occupied. Under existing law, these offenses are classified as misdemeanors unless proof is available that the person knew the building was occupied at the time of the shooting or there was more than $500 of property damage. Sponsor believes, in lieu of a lot of dwellings in Juneau and Anchorage in the last year, that there's really no justification for this type of activity, and he introduced it to address this problem. And basically, that's what the bill does. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Yes, Representative.
I do have a question. It's sort of a technical nature here. On page 2, section 3A, 2, the language is essentially the same as that contained in section 3, which raises equal protection problems in the event that there's a prosecution based on the felony as opposed to on the misdemeanor. Generally, when a charge, the level of a charge relies solely on prosecutorial discretion, it's problematic. And I don't recall offhand the cases that stand for that proposition, but that is some concern, and it seemed to me an easy thing to do, just pull out section A.2 or A2, and we're still covered.
I believe the Department of Law, we were going to address A.2, and...
Annie has signed up to testify. Would you like to join us at the table, Annie?
I'm not sure, not being an attorney, whether the amendment that the Department of Law is going to propose would cover the equal protection.
Well, that's the department's concern, too, through the chair, is that it's similar, and when you have similar conduct covered by two different statutes, you have potential problems with prosecutorial discretion. And the problem is there are no other circumstances that separate the two. I mean, if there were circumstances here that separated the two, there are other provisions in law that say except for under other circumstances, but here it's really the same language.
If three were to be gone, we would have the bill as effective as it is.
If 3A double I were gone.
Oh.
I think that's what the position of, that's what you were suggesting.
Well, I mean, either one can disappear, but.
Since they're identical, we just want to do away with the ambiguity, the problem.
Well, if section 3 were gone, you would still have, what you would have is this section in law, paragraph 3 under 210, which is, I believe, fifth degree misconduct involving weapons, without that provision. So they would still be the same. Discharge a weapon.
Uh-huh.
Well, it wouldn't be at a building. That's the difference.
I mean,
Representative Berkowitz?
Reading, though, it's still similar enough so that wouldn't withstand scrutiny. And you automatically see this, what's intended to be a B felony bumped down to be an A misdemeanor.
Well, it would be a problem. I'm not sure that we would, it's hard to sometimes predict how that would come out. We would hope to win on it, but we would definitely be litigating it, I would think. Our suggestion was at least to remove the provision in 2i that says with a risk of damage to property or I think the problem is that when you're dealing with just damage to property, you've got charges under criminal mischief and charges under this section, and this section doesn't have any provision gradating the damage to property according to the amount of damage that's done, $50 for a misdemeanor and so we would suggest that at least that part of little 2i be removed.
Representative Berkowitz.
Similar to less, I mean, I don't think we're giving up anything. If you fire a gun at a building and there's a risk of physical injury, then you're almost certainly in the situation of an assault.
Well, particularly because the intent language at the beginning of the bill says that if you discharge a firearm at a building and the building is occupied, the legislative intent is that there is strict liability as to that element that the building was occupied. So, yes, I would agree with you.
Representative Croft?
And on that point, that part about risk of damage to property confused me when I read it. It seems like any time you discharge a firearm at a building, you're having a risk of damage to property, namely to the building. And if that's all you have, if you're just shooting at a shed, then even though you're guaranteed it's unoccupied, you checked it or whatever, that might not be the best conduct to engage in, but does it rise to this level? And the way I read it, you would be under this provision because you discharged a firearm at or in the direction of a building that wasn't occupied, but with reckless disregard for risk of damage to the property. So with that damage to property as opposed to persons, we're stepping up a notch, shooting at an empty building. And I can understand why we would do it either a dwelling, which is likely to be occupied, or a building that may be unlikely to be occupied, but is in fact a school, is what we were using as an example. So those two, because they have serious risk to people, make some sense to me. Raising to this level, shooting at a shed, doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Sponsor talked with the Department of Law before the hearing and is amenable to the department's suggested amendment to remove that portion. If it's,
which is a risk of damage to property or?
Section 2.
Uh-huh. That would be removed. Is that what you're...
And I'd make... Well, for discussion purposes, then I'd make that amendment. Have we adopted... Do we have the bill before us?
Yes.
And
no, I guess we do. We haven't. I don't know.
Yeah, it's before us.
It's before us, but did it... yes. I wanted to make sure that it wasn't something changed. You were in the process of changing.
Right.
Well, what I wanted to be sure when it was a CS was if something that had been modified, but it isn't. It's maybe to be modified. Okay. Representative Croft.
Is that the proper time to do this? You prefer
yes.
me to then
yep.
Just before you do, Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Judge Rookberg?
No. Wouldn't be just not removing the whole little two, but just the a risk of damage to the property or removing that?
I think that's...
I was going to make it, and you could find out.
Oh. Well, then we should let Representative Croft proceed.
All right. Sounds like a good idea. Representative Croft?
And I don't object to that.
To eliminate from line 13 on page 2, a risk of damage to, and on 14, property or. So it would take out that, and it would read, with reckless disregard for a risk of physical injury to a person.
I object for discussion purposes.
All right. Representative Berkowitz?
We're still left with the same problem with which, since you're written in the disjunctive, risk of damage to property or risk of physical injury, that's the same language that's contained in Section 3. And that's why I think it's my understanding that law wanted to move that whole section, little 2, out.
Mr. Chairman, that's what we would like to see removed. There is a difference in that under 3 we're talking about a building, and that's paragraph 3 on line 10, and then paragraph 3 on line 17, which is a different statute, which is misconduct involving weapons, I believe, in the fifth degree. There is a difference in that the one on line 17 is not necessarily at a building. So I think we could live with the amendment that was suggested by Representative Croft, although our original position was we would like to see all of 2 little I out.
If I might, I think what that does is confuse it, because it's different. If the building is occupied and there's no risk of physical injury, you're shooting at one end of the building, someone's at the other end, that's still swept up under the B felony, but there's an internal contradiction. Is that case all of a sudden is somehow viewed as being the same as a situation where there's someone in a room, perhaps, that gets shot at? And if I were to be in a situation where I was having to defend somebody, that sort of discrepancy is something you might seize on and invite litigation. Whereas if the building's occupied, it doesn't matter. So if we just do away with little 2,
yeah,
we have no problems whatsoever.
Representative Rookberg, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, this really hits home to me, given 30 years of real estate, particularly commercial real estate.
You don't like your building shot at.
That's exactly right, because it's a real apparent risk, and it does happen quite frequently. And matter of fact, there should be a presumption that the building is occupied, even if it's at night, and that's why the second portion has a merit by staying in. If, in fact, you can presume that there is a potentiality of a person being in the building, that would be the the reckless disregard for the potentiality of physical injury. So, you know, just because a building is in the evening hours doesn't necessarily mean it's not occupied. So that, you know, I can appreciate, I think clearly there's a problem here in terms of the equal protection provision and conflict that should be corrected here. But I'm concerned because the language is clear that in little I, it is occupied. And I, you know, I think the little 2I makes the, puts the burden on somebody to make sure it's not occupied. So I think that is absolutely necessary. But I'm not sure if it corrects this other problem that we need to correct. Maybe we need to remove the misdemeanor from the books. I'm not sure how that works under the Title 11 type of structure you want to do, but because this is a very clear and meaningful bill before us, and it has real application to our everyday lives right now. So,
Representative Crow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, then maybe the problem is little I, not one, not two. I mean, it seems to me to make sense to say, shooting at a dwelling, we're going to presume that people are there, and so that's a crime against a person, or can be in the same category. And shooting at a building with reckless disregard of physical injury to a person. So houses are one thing. Buildings, if you have some way of knowing that there are people there, are in the same class as it. But little I creates a sort of weird strict liability. You could have, I'm not excusing their conduct, but you could have no reason to know. It's not reckless disregard. I checked it. There was somebody hiding under in the cellar or whatever. I mean, this doesn't say, and you knew it was occupied, or you should have known it was occupied, anything. It just is occupied. Somebody in a building you didn't think would be there, you checked, you did everything. Now, it's still not good conduct, of course, to be shooting at Representative Roquebrune's buildings, but the question is, when is it felony? And typically, these are, though not uniformly, when we make felonies for things that have a risk of harming people. Though big thefts and things become felonies, but the more typical distinction is that if you have a risk to a person. So I don't know what we've done with amendment number one, but if we do that, take out the property and take out this strict, the building is occupied but you didn't, it sets up a two-tiered. A dwelling, we're going to presume it's occupied. A building, if you should have known it was occupied.
Representative Porter.
Well, I think I would prefer in the discussion of which one to eliminate that you eliminate I instead of double I. And the reason I say that is that there are situations, especially now with concealed carry permit situations, where people will have law enforcement officers now and a whole bunch of other folks as the years progress will be armed in the street, and assuming that a police officer or one of these other folks has got the legitimate right to use a firearm, they're shooting at a person, obviously, but they're shooting in the direction of the building. Technically, they hit the person, but they've committed a felony because they've shot in the direction of the building. I don't think that's what
Yeah.
As opposed to a substantial risk of harming, and I would think maybe we'd want to qualify this person here, an otherwise innocent person or whatever. But.
If we went that route, eliminated I, left I in, do we still have the conflict then with lines 17 and 19?
If I might, Mr. Chair, I think you do if we keep the property section in, but I don't believe you do if you take the property section out.
Property phrase, if you want
to say. With reckless disregard.
That would be my recommendation, but I still would like to have some qualifier on the person.
It would.
Otherwise.
It would seem, if I might, on that, it would seem to me that if you're in a shootout situation, then you've got all kinds of the law attaching to justification would attach. So
I don't think I'd be comfortable with that.
May I just respond to the proposal to eliminate little I? Our problem is in prosecuting. My understanding from the sponsor was that the purpose is to criminalize at a higher level drive-by shootings of buildings. And if a person shoots at a store in the middle of the night, it's hard for us to prove that there was a substantial risk, that there was a person in it, and that the person disregarded the risk. Mm-hmm. Because there isn't a big risk of people being in a building.
Well, if that's the case, then it's property damage, and why the heck are we talking about a felony? You know, let's get real.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
any Brookberg.
For the record, one of the most common phenomena in the larger urban areas is bullet striking a glass curtain wall of a commercial office building, in which those spandrel glasses are worth anywhere from $700 to $1,500 each. But I think that's not the point here, and I agree with President Porter.
The vast majority of those cases, as a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, if I may, are slingshot or BB gun, pellet gun cases, and not firearms anyway.
And if I might, those are also felonies.
Right. They should. Yeah. And they, because they're probably in another.
Whoa!
Representative. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to be leaving right now, another appointment, but I hate to bring this up, but the concept of firing a firearm within the building, it's not spoken to, and maybe it should be spoken to. If this could happen, as long as we're in revisiting the premises. But
would that be drive-out shootings?
And Mr. Chairman, before I leave, I would like to say that, as my colleagues, as I found out in Great Britain in the election over there, they don't, because of the finance reform law, they call it doorstepping. They go door knocking, canvassing around, and that's what they call canvassing over there, doorstepping. And in my doorstepping in the past election, I've had the great misfortune of meeting constituents and neighbors of in their private residences where I've literally seen bullet holes in their front doors. And it's very disturbing to see that from this drive-by phenomenon. So in what I would consider a very middle class type of neighborhood in the heart of Anchorage, Alaska.
So where does that put us? Representative Croft.
Maybe back to the amendment. The first one was to take property damage out of two.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone object to it? Or?
That's the one that I don't know where everybody got a copy. That's, we'll call amendment number one, which deletes a risk of damage or property or.
And I withdraw my objection to that.
Anticipatorily. If no objection, that amendment is adopted.
And I would move amendment two, which is to withdraw section A, little I.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Porter.
Could I ask the Department of Law to help me with a friendly amendment, which would put some qualifying term in front of person that would eliminate someone who was otherwise lawfully bought and paid for?
An officer or somebody who is legitimately?
Yeah, well, I mean.
To a person who's legitimately on the property?
To a person who's legitimately going to be shot at.
And are you talking about line 14?
Yes. In other words, I am shooting at this person with absolute reckless disregard for his safety because I want to shoot him. I have a legal right to shoot him. I don't want to be guilty of a felony.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. I would hope that our prosecutors would not.
Well, I wouldn't either, but let's not set up something that makes the question.
I would be happy to provide that. I think it'll take a little thought to say it the way that is clear and gets at what you want. I would be happy to bring that in this afternoon or tomorrow if you'd like to.
Discharge a firearm without legal justification at or in the direction of a building.
That's a suggestion. But I don't know that would also qualify dwelling, and I don't know whether, I would have to think about whether you'd want to qualify dwelling with that.
Good, we can, I mean, whatever the chairman's pleasure.
Yeah. So, as to my amendment, which is just hanging out here.
Did you make an amendment? I'm sorry.
Yes, I
did. All right, you have made an...
To withdraw little I.
Is there objection to withdrawing little I?
No.
You meant it to be part, but I guess yours is three. Huh?
But
okay, that's amendment number two. Hearing no objection, that's acceptable.
Okay, now I've still got the same question then. If we leave B in place,
yeah.
What about the legitimate shooting that happens to be in that general direction, but...
With section 3?
Line 14 about the person.
Line 15.
Oh, the dwelling.
Well, if you put some legal justification in on line 10, something to that effect, that would also cover a dwelling.
And what I'd said, but it's up to you, discharges a firearm without legal justification at or in the direction of
okay.
building
yeah.
the dwelling.
So we're getting rid of B and putting a dwelling, building or dwelling? We could get rid of dwelling entirely.
Where were you, Representative Croft?
Line 10.
Line 10 between firearm and at, putting in the words without legal justification.
Oh,
to okay. read discharges a firearm without legal justification at or in the direction of blah, blah.
Well, that takes care of both. Then.
Uh-huh.
All right.
A building with reckless disregard for a risk okay. of physical injury to a person.
Dwelling or the person down on three.
You don't need dwelling then.
Well, it...
Well, it could be a tent or something.
It establishes that dwellings are reckless. If it's a dwelling, you don't have to prove that. That's yeah. presumed.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a building, you have to show something else.
Does everybody understand what that third... amendment does? Discharges a firearm without legal justification, and then goes on.
See, if a police officer or a common,
sure.
not common, a person with a permit is accosted in a street, in a residential street, in effect, they can't defend themselves.
That's right.
Because
yeah.
you know,
I think it's a great idea. Any objection? Hearing none, those three amendments have been adopted.
Move it today, or
I would like to.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move SB 70 out of committee as amended, with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Hearing none, it's gone.
I am also.
Yeah, I am too.
Hey, do we
adjourn?
Thank you, sir.